Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon. Here to do just that, Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, although he looks fairly youthful. He started in Wolfsburg, Germany with the Factory Mechanics Training School back in 79, moved on from there. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much, Ray. Glad to be back.
So you mentioned as we were speaking before the show started that surprising number of accidents for summer.
Oh yeah. Pat over in the shop can attest to this. We're pulling our hair out because we've had so many animal hits, deer collisions.
Mm.
And normally this time of year, you're not getting that. It's usually in the fall when they're running around looking for their mates.
What do you think it is? Dry weather?
I think it's overpopulation.
Yeah.
From what they're telling me, a lot of deer survived this mild winter, and there's just too many of them running around.
Interesting.
So people watch out. They're out there like crazy.
So you haven't seen too many injuries, but lots of body work to be done. And
A lot of crinkled up cars.
Yeah. Yep. You know, it's funny. Cars today, back in my day, when cars were real metal, these were not as big of a deal.
True. And part of it today is cars today take the impacts very well, and they're designed that way. And a lot of the car gives in to the crash. There's crumple zones, and there's areas of the car that are made to deform and take the impact.
Yeah.
And what complicates or adds tremendous cost to the repair are all the airbag and restraint systems. Because when your airbags deploy, and in most cases your seat belts deploy, all those components have to be replaced, and they're very expensive.
How convenient for you.
Sometimes, yes, but sometimes it pushes the car to a total loss, even though you look at it and you say, there's not that much damage there.
Yeah. You know, regarding bumpers, you know, in the old days, they were metal.
Oh, yeah.
But now they're still metal, but they have plastic on the outside, which gets destroyed, even if in a little fender bender.
Yes.
And it costs a lot of money to replace. What kind of a scam is that?
We fix a lot of bumper covers because it's all painted from the ground up. There's no big giant chrome bumpers, and they were called bumpers for a reason. You bumped into stuff, and a lot of times nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
Now one of those little bumpers can be a pretty pricey repair.
It certainly can. And I'm not here to, you know, obviously this is not your idea. I'm not indicting you. This is not 60 Minutes. Although it's hot and sweaty in Studio A, and maybe I'm starting to feel like...
At first, I thought you were kidding, but yes, it is warm in here.
Okay. All right. I'm not the only one. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. To the phones we go. Patrick in LaGrangeville. Patrick.
Hello. Yes. I've got a 2000 Ford Windstar with 203,000 miles on it, and I pushed it hard the other week. The transmission's been doing a funny downshift thing when I come to a slowdown, but now after about 15 or 20 minutes, the overdrive off light comes on and it flashes on and off, although overdrive isn't off and it still works, you know, by that button. I did a little bit of research on it, and one site said maybe it could be a vehicle speed sensor, one said it could be a transmission regulator solenoid, or is it just the transmission's going to die here sometime?
Well, yes to most of your responses. Not so much the last one necessarily, but that particular light is the transmission's so-called check engine light. It reports to the driver that there's something going wrong regarding the transmission. It doesn't mean it's necessarily internal or ready to completely fail, but something's going on regarding its controls. You know, and the sensors are all in question. And somebody, you mentioned vehicle speed sensor, a possibility, although your symptoms probably would be speedometer doesn't work all the time or the needle bounces erratically. But
yeah, no, that's no problem.
Yeah. What you need to do, just as if your check engine light had come on, is to get it scanned at your shop where you normally take it. And they're going to read codes from the transmission computer, and those codes are going to lead them to the area of the problem. And it could be bad news coming, or it could be something relatively easy to fix. But that's what you got to do. You got to get it scanned.
All right. Well, I guess that's the best you can do for me. I had one of these vehicles before, and when this happened, I just continued driving the vehicle, and then eventually the overdrive stopped working, and then eventually the whole transmission stopped working. So this time I stopped driving the vehicle, and I'll get it checked out.
All right. You have 203,000 miles on it?
Yeah.
We've done very well.
Do you think that's the you think that's the original transmission?
I think it is. I bought it from a mechanic who had, you know, driven it back and forth up and down the highway a lot to Florida, back and forth, and he seemed to baby it, and I probably should have done the same. But yeah, I think everything is original on it.
I mean, that's incredibly good use for an automatic transmission.
Good job.
Yeah, it is.
All right, thanks, Patrick.
Thank you very much. Be well.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's the automotive Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Gordon, did you see in the news a couple of days ago the 1966 Volvo that is reaching 3 million miles?
Yes. Somebody cut that article out and handed it to me just yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's amazing you mentioned that today. And I understand, is Volvo giving him a new car periodically when he hits these milestones?
I don't know.
I didn't read the article completely through. But the guy that gave it to me said it looks like when he hits like a million mile mark, they're giving him a car.
So he has, this will be his third then.
That's the way I understood it. And I'm sure other people saw that. So maybe that's not correct, but that's the way I read it.
I wonder if that's the original transmission. I think not,
I
right?
I doubt it.
Okay. Paul and Shokin. Paul, you're on.
Yes. Thanks for taking the call. It's funny you mentioned the car with a million miles on it. I have a 1992 Honda Civic hatchback. It has over 350,000 miles on it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. But my mechanic basically told me I need about $750 worth of work done on it. And I'm thinking I probably should get something else. The body's starting to show, you know, rust and whatnot. So I was wondering if you had any advice on looking for a used car. I don't know about auto auctions or things like that, but if you have any sage advice.
All right, that's
sure.
A good question.
Are you looking for a similar vehicle?
In other words, somewhere, good gas mileage. I don't know if there's particular makes of cars that are better on repairs or just the parts are still available. I heard that screws aren't so great on repairs. They're expensive.
Well, which one was bad? What brand was that you said?
Subarus.
Oh, really? I don't know. I see a lot of them on the road.
Yeah, no, we do a lot of Subaru work, and I have very, very good success with those cars for the most part. I mean, they have their areas just like everything else, but is your current car, Paul, did you say it was a Civic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a similar vehicle, if that size car suits you well and you don't need all-wheel drive, Subarus are all-wheel drive, so that takes that out of the equation. Why not look for a replacement Civic? You've had such good luck with it. You seem to like it.
Sure.
They are a good car. They last a long time. And if you're happy with how the car operates and the size of it and the feel of it, you know, comparable vehicles to the Civic, their big competition, of course, is the Toyota Corolla. Also a long life, easy to live with vehicle. If you go to Nissan, and I'm picking Japanese brands at the moment because you had such good luck with this Honda, Nissan Sentra kind of falls into that same program. So, I mean, I think I'd kind of look along the lines of the same vehicle.
Okay.
Great.
Good luck. Thanks, Paul.
Hey,
well, all right. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Our guest is Gordon Fricke. Ron in Albany, you're next on Vox Pop.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a 2004 Mazda 3 with 115,000 miles, and it has the 2.3-liter engine, four-cylinder. And initially at idle, the car was always very quiet, but now there seems to be a sort of a tick. I mean, it's quite low, but if you listen carefully, you can hear a tick, tick, tick while the engine is at idle.
Did this ticking sound just appear one day, or is it you're just all of a sudden slowly starting to hear it, and is it getting noisier?
Yeah, slowly I started to hear it, and it got to a point where it was a little louder, but now it seems less loud than before. But it came on gradually.
And the mileage, did you say 115?
Yes, sir.
115,000, okay. How are you with getting your oil changed in regular intervals?
Well, I run synthetic oil, so I usually do about 10,000 miles before I change it.
What type of driving do you do? Is it purely a nice, easy highway commute, or is it pretty much everything in between?
It's mixed, but it's mostly, you know, country route type driving.
Yeah. That 10,000-mile interval is too much. Even though the oil, we've had this question
yes.
many times, and it's a very popular and very good question because everybody knows that their car needs oil and their oil needs to be changed, and it's one of the most basic but most important services, and it gets taken too lightly. Synthetic oils, yes, they can last a long time, but they will also get heavily contaminated with combustion byproducts, moisture, particularly in the winter. You know, let's say you're putting that 10,000 miles on the car and you're going from, let's say, September into the summer. Your car just went through 2.5, 3 seasons. And that hot, cold starts, stop and go, is bad on the oil. I think you should change the oil more frequently. And what you could have the beginning of is a what's called a valve lifter starting to tick. And it's possible that if you get your oil changed right away, that you may find that that tick kind of works its way out.
Hmm.
And if where you get the oil changed, they comment that the oil was absolutely filthy black, I would get it changed right away, and then I think I would go do it again maybe in 1,000 miles and start getting that crankcase cleaned up and see what happens.
Okay. Ron, we got to take a break here, but good luck, my friend. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is here to answer your calls on cars, and we'll be back. Take more calls coming up.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Schoharie Valley Farms, the Carrot Barn, valley-grown produce and greenhouse crops, local dairy and meats, and a bakery. South of exit 23 off I-88, 518-295-7139. The Cooperstown Summer Music Festival, presenting the Jupiter String Quartet, July 29th at 7:30 p.m. Performing works by Haydn, Bartok, and Mendelssohn, CooperstownMusicFest.org. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area. RichardsFuel.com. Omai International Arts Center, Artists Open Studio Weekend, July 14th and 15th, 30 artists from 25 countries, tours Sunday 1 to 5, dinner and dancing, country brunch, artomai.org.
Yes, I love playing a little James Brown here on a Thursday edition of Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It is Vox Pop. It is Gordon Fricke. It is the car show. And back to the phones we go. Tim in Warwick. Tim, you're on.
Hey, hi, guys. Great show as always. I just bought a 94 GMC pickup truck, 70,000 miles, one owner, nice and clean. I'm taking a cross-country trip to Oregon this summer, there and back, with my two German Shepherds, and I've got a few places I want to stop along the way. Question is, how long can you leave a car or truck running with the air conditioning in idle? Are there questions about engine wear, fumes in the cab, and so on?
Wow.
I would call a New York City taxi cab driver because those cars are idling or running all day with the air conditioning on, and there's really not a real limit.
Okay.
In super hot weather, the air conditioning system is going to tax the cooling system a little bit more because of the additional heat caused by the air conditioning condenser. But if everything is up to par, and some things you can very easily do is make sure the radiator and the AC condenser, which is in front of the radiator, are nice and clear
What do you mean?
There's fins in the radiator and in the condenser. So you want to make sure there's not debris in there, leaves, pollen caked up on there, dust and dirt. And the reason I mentioned that New York City taxicab thing, primarily one of the big taxi cars is a Ford Crown Victoria, and they had a big incidence of air getting sucked between the radiator and the condenser by the fan, and they would pull all kinds of junk up through there, leaves, little twigs, pollen, you know, in the spring when the dandelion, all that white stuff is floating around, and it'll plug up the radiator and or the condenser or partially plug it, and you'll have a loss of cooling and air conditioning function. So I think if everything was up to snuff, you know, you could really let that thing run a long time with the air conditioner. Everything's going to take care of itself, providing everything's good, you know, the fan and all that.
Okay, and no problem with fumes inside the cab. It's all tight and so on.
Well, if your exhaust system is fine from front to back, that's not going to be an issue either, really. Mm. And your vehicle has a catalytic converter, so the exhaust coming out of the other end of the converter today is relatively clean. So I think you're going to be fine.
All right.
Good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
good luck. It. Yep, thanks a lot. Let's go to Pat in New Paltz. Pat, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure.
I have a 97 Subaru with 259,000 miles on it.
Hmm.
And I've never changed the transmission fluid. And I'm wondering if I should do it or not, or will it make a bigger problem?
Well, that's a good question. And we have spoken about that in the past. And it borders, there is some truth to leaving it alone at this stage of the vehicle's life. The theory is that varnish and deposits from that fluid being in there so long has built up and taken, has compensated for some normal wear and tear. So the thought is if you flush or change the fluid, the new fluid's got a lot of detergent in it, and it's going to clean up the deposits that have built up over those 260,000 miles, and all of a sudden now you might have issues or problems that were not there prior to flushing it. It doesn't necessarily mean that you go change that transmission fluid a week later, the transmission's gone, but there is some truth to it. My recommendation is to change it on a regular basis and just keep doing it, and then this will never occur. You'll never have this super black fluid, and you won't get the buildup. At this stage of your car's life, I don't know. I wouldn't want to tell you go flush it, and then 2 weeks later you call back and say, thanks a lot.
That wouldn't be really good.
My transmission's gone. So I guess the correct level would be important. And on Subarus, you can drain and refill those. They have a drain plug. And yours might even have a spin-on filter on the side of the transmission. That wasn't there on all of them, but did you notice that on yours?
Oh, I haven't really crawled under it in a while.
Yeah. If you're going to do anything, I would not do a total flush. I wouldn't go to a shop that does total flushes. I would do a drain and refill, and if it has a spin-on filter, I would change that filter. And you're only changing about a third of the fluid when that happens. If you're going to do anything, that's what I would do.
Okay. Good
all
luck.
Right.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now. 800-348-2551, the number, 800-348-2551. Vox Pop with Gordon Fricke, and we've rescheduled this program about five times. Nice to have you here. Let's go back to Chris in Sandsgate, is it?
Sandsgate.
How are you?
Sandsgate, Vermont. I am just ducky. Thank you guys very much for taking my call. Thank you, Gordon.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Ray, WAMC's most valuable player.
Very kind, very kind.
Well, it was what you were saying earlier, Ray, about real steel cars, and I know you're a Caddy fan.
Yes.
I have an old Mercedes diesel, an 87 300D, and all the steel is fine, but I've been replacing rubber. Rubber seems to be the weak link, you know, 25 years out.
I've had that problem with older cars, too. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm at the point now. I replaced the rubber in the front, and I replaced the rubber along the drive shaft. and now I'm at the rear subframe where the differential is and all the suspension links. A lot of rubber in there. And I was wondering, Gordon, you know, with your training and everything, have you ever removed a subframe on a Mercedes? I need a little sage advice. Because I do everything with this car, but this is interesting.
So you're talking about the bushings that hold the subframe in, basically.
Okay, what is a subframe for those of us who are not as familiar?
Okay, the subframe is a section of steel, usually, can be aluminum, that holds major components into the chassis or the unibody of the car. In other words, your Cadillac, for example, Ray, up front, you've got an engine and transmission assembly all together. It's front-wheel drive. They're bolted together. The engine is sideways, and it's held in the chassis of the car by a separate frame called the subframe.
I see.
So it holds big stuff into the unibody or chassis of the car.
Gotcha.
And cars have them in the front and sometimes in the rear.
Okay.
And in the case of this old Mercedes, it has a rear one to hold the differential up in there. So I guess the question, Chris, is, are you talking about the bushings that hold that rear subframe in,
yeah,
to the car?
I think they're gone.
Well,
and I've looked at, I mean, they're 25 years old, right?
Well, yeah, but they don't necessarily have to be that bad. Have you been under there? Are they cracking, and is that thing wobbling all over the place?
It's really not wobbling all over the place, but I've had the wheels aligned, and it's losing rubber in the back like crazy. And I know, okay, it has a five-link suspension on each side.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff needs to be replaced. That would be easier, I think, to do with that subframe out of the car, wouldn't it?
How many miles are on the car?
Well over 320,000.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure there is some wear and tear going on back there. So are you saying it's having trouble keeping alignment, so you're wearing out tires too fast?
Yeah, I've had the car aligned, and I got new rear tires like, you know, a year ago right now, and they were just worn to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I put new shocks in. And I just think that I'm just following the lead of this rubber.
Yeah.
You know, just changing every bit of rubber I can underneath there,
yeah,
is the right thing to do.
Yeah, those subframe bushings, they may be, and I'm not sure how that setup is because I haven't changed the subframe on the back of those cars. We do have, in fact, I've got one in the shop right now, but it's much, much less mileage. Depending on how they're fitted into that subframe, sometimes they require some press work, getting them in and out, or some careful hammering and drifts.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing to do would be to size up the job and see what the best route is, if you can take it out. It is quite a bit of work, you know, because you're involved with the differential, the drive shaft, the drive axles going out to each wheel,
yeah,
and all those links. It's a lot of, if that car is getting really rusty back there, you're going to have a tough time getting all the nuts and bolts out of there to change,
yeah,
that.
I've looked at all, there are four mounting points to the body, and they all look like they're in good shape.
Yeah, I think the main bolts are going to be fine, but all the stuff that you have to take off related to that could give you some trouble.
Yeah,
so you better take a good long look, because you don't want to be breaking off nuts and bolts back there, and then, you know, you've got torches and welding and drilling and tapping, and then you're going to really have a massive project on your hands.
Unless he has a lot of time.
A lot of time.
Story of my life.
Ha! Chris, thanks a lot. Good luck. Let us know how you did.
Yep. I will. Thank you guys very much.
We'll see you. 800-348-2551, the number. And our guest is Gordon Fricke. We go to Darren in Schenectady. Darren, you're on.
Oh, hi guys. How are you doing today?
Good.
I have a 96 Ford Econoline van that the oil pressure needle on the dashboard just started twitching. But it doesn't do it all the time. It only does it when you're in gear and you're at a stop. Otherwise, it's rock steady, right up and down in the middle. And when you're driving around, it doesn't move at all. And I was just wondering, does that have anything to do with the idle speed? Because it stalled on me the other day.
Yeah, that last comment is kind of a key to possibly what's going on. So your vehicle has an oil pressure gauge, correct?
Yes.
Now, you're not talking about the red light.
No.
Okay. That is an electrical gauge in your dash that's wired to a sensor on the engine that's reading the pressure of the engine oil. And engine oil pressure increases with RPM to a point where the relief valve on the oil pump says we've reached our maximum pressure. That's where we're going to hold it. But on the other end, when you come down to an idle, the oil pump is turning much, much slower, so the oil pressure goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to do that as long as it doesn't go too low. How low is it reading? Is it getting right down to the low mark on that gauge?
No, it usually goes from like a quarter to about a half, but it twitches back and forth.
Yeah. And is it twitching like that when you feel it's close to stalling?
Yes.
Yeah, because when that engine is running at too low of an RPM and it's on the verge of stalling, and also if the engine is not steady, if when it's trying to stall, if it's jumping up and down a few hundred RPM, that oil pump is the pressure is going up and down. It's spiking and going back down pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So you either have two things going. It's the result of the near stalling condition.
Okay.
Or there's a glitch in the sending unit or the gauge. And those,
okay.
It's, you know, you got to sort those. But if your pressure is always normal still when you're driving,
right.
I doubt you've got any issues with the engine.
Okay.
But I think I'd be looking at the stalling first. And then if you get that resolved and everything's fine, you know that's what it was.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Darren, thank you. It's Jim's turn in Cheshire. Jim, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon. I just bought a 06 Ford 350 four-wheel drive pickup truck, and it's got 100,000 miles, and the spark plugs, I hear that, you know, it's better maybe just to leave them in if it's running good, but on the other hand, I would like to, you know, have new plugs in the truck, so I was wondering what your guest would have to say about that.
All right. Guest, what do you think?
I can give you some very first-hand experience with those spark plugs.
Okay.
They can be really, really ugly. What Ford did regarding the spark plugs, is yours a 5.4 liter Triton engine? Or is it a
5.4.
Okay. What Ford did is, number one, the spark plugs are in a bad location. The back ones are hard to get at. Each spark plug has its own ignition coil on top of it. And that's not the worst thing. Just about every car has that now. But the way they designed that cylinder head and the spark plugs, they're very, very deep down in the cylinder head from the standpoint of removing them. And the clearances that were engineered into the spark plug, the design of the plug and that cylinder head are creating tremendous trouble with the spark plugs getting seized or stuck in the head.
Ah.
And the change interval on those is quite high. It's in the 100,000 mile range. So the truck runs great. The plugs are in there for all these years and all these miles. And when it comes time to taking them out, you can break one off inside the head. And depending on the style of the spark plug that they use, because there was a handful of years where they went to like a modular spark plug. It was almost a hollow shell. They're not very strong, and they break off. And we had one, I don't know, a couple months ago, and it was the worst possible one to break. It was the rearmost cylinder on the driver's side, or maybe the second to worst location. And the plug broke off, the threads came out, but the tip stayed in the head.
Hmm.
They make a special tool that goes in there and presses the broken porcelain to the tip of the plug. The tool then threads into the broken piece, and then another device goes on the tool and pulls the broken piece out.
Wow.
And the sweat's rolling off your forehead every stage of the game.
It's like an operation.
Yeah, because even though...
Well, I didn't plan on doing it myself.
Yeah.
I mean, a local garage said, you know, it's a $300 job. We got the special tool, and,
yep.
You know, they said it was like no big thing, but...
Well, they should be replaced, no question about it. And Ford has a procedure of how to remove them, And it's in all of the manuals, all data, and Mitchell. But
I mean, I wasn't going to do it myself.
No,
The fact that, then they're saying it's like $50 each plug if they all break. So then,
yeah. So your shop is, yeah. Your sounds like your shop is aware of the situation. And
oh, yeah, they are, yeah.
The way Ford writes it is they say to get on there with a wrench and attempt to move the spark plug, I think it's an eighth of a turn, no further. And then shoot a special penetrating oil in it, and then go to the next one, and then go to the next one, and go to the next one, and you're hoping that this special oil dissolves the combustion products, the carbon and stuff, and you can get them out.
So let me get this straight: replacing spark plugs is going to run $700?
No.
Well, if they all break off,
they won't. They won't all break off.
Yeah. There's some. Additive you can put on into the gas to like start breaking up that carbon that's like on the plug.
Well, I don't know how much that's going to get cleaned up, but it never hurts. And I got Ray on this regiment now too of putting a cleaner in the gas. A Tecron is one very good brand, and that does do a combustion chamber cleanup. Whether it'll get up into those plug threads, I don't know, but it certainly is worth a try.
And it sure does give you a little extra zip at the stoplight. It's very nice. Yeah. Jim, we got a break here. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
800-348-2551, the telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. More with Gordon Fricke coming up.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available. TheDamCafeAndDeli.com. The Theater Bar, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, running now through July 22nd. Professional theater in the country, TheaterBarn.com. Woodstock School of Art, Woodstock, New York, offering studio classes in fine art, no experience necessary, WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. And Shedman Custom Woodworks, building sheds, gazebos, animal shelters, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years. New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York, shedman.com for inventory.
So we'll be off the air tonight between 9 and 10 o'clock. All WAMC frequencies and web streams will be off the air. Engineering is making some major repairs and upgrades to critical power systems for the entire network. So if you tune in online or over the air and you don't hear anything, it's because we're not there. But we'll be back. It may be less than an hour. It could be a little more than an hour. But around 9 o'clock to around 10 o'clock, you can expect a little disruption. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Janet in Albany, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2003 Honda Civic Hybrid. And the original clutch, I'm still with the original clutch. It has 120,000 miles on it. And my son, I would like to teach my son how to drive a clutch, but I'm just, like, I think that if I continue to drive my car, I'll get a lot more miles out of my clutch, but I'm afraid that if I teach him how to drive it, I'll need a new one right away. So I'm wondering, should I just go ahead and teach him, or should I wait and just let this one go when it goes and then, you know, teach him when I have a new one?
Buy him his own car.
Whose car can you borrow to do that with? Can you? just kidding. Good question, because clutches are a very, very tricky area of the car because they can last the life of the car. And I'm talking, you could get 260,000 miles out of a clutch or better. You could also get one weekend out of it with the wrong person operating it. So if your son masters clutching very, very quickly, you may really not have anything to worry about. If he has trouble with it and slips it a lot and does the wrong things, And let's say you're not in the car anymore. Let's say you've taught him how to drive and he takes it somewhere and then really burns the clutch out. It could be awful.
What's the best way to burn a clutch out?
The fastest way?
Yeah.
Start out in the wrong gear.
Okay, that's a good
put
one.
It in third instead of first.
Right.
You know, and just keep slipping it and slipping it, saying, why is this car not moving?
Right.
And it's funny, we were just talking this morning about clutches. And when I worked at a dealership years ago, warranting a clutch was a funny thing because the question is, did the owner burn it out or was there a problem with the clutch? So we would change the clutch. And at that time, this was through Volkswagen and Audi, at that time they would take care of the first clutch. And if another one occurred shortly thereafter, they would say there's something going on here.
Well, what if you had two bad clutches? That's a terrible corporate policy.
Well, you're right.
I've seen some bad automotive parts in my time.
Yes. No, you're right. You're right. So I would go for a ride with the customer with the new clutch.
Oh.
And just note how they shifted and operated the car.
Interesting.
And sometimes I'm telling you, I would walk in sometimes shaking my head saying, that clutch is going to be gone in 8,000 miles.
What do you think, Janet? Is this scaring you, Janet?
Well, you know, my clutch feel, I just had the, I thought it was going, and it turned out it just needed the slave cylinder.
Yep.
And now it feels like normal, and it doesn't seem to be having any problems. I don't know, I'm just concerned.
Sure. Set aside a little clutch fund, kind of like a college fund, and if it needs a clutch, it needs a clutch. I mean, if you want to teach them on it, that's really the only way to do it.
So, well, then I guess it sounds like it's better to do it while it's old rather than when if I get a new one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't go, of course you think the clutch is okay now after that slave cylinder, but I would definitely teach him, try to get him to operate this clutch properly on the current one, because if you do have to replace it, then you're not learning on a brand new clutch.
Good plan. Good plan.
Yeah.
Good luck,
okay.
Janet. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, it's... Maybe you can clear this up for me. This is one of those weird things that has gone through my mind for 20-plus years. I always had this theory that, especially with cars that are standards and clutches, the car gets used to the driver. In other words, how you work the clutch. It works in. So then if you lend the car for an extended period of time to somebody who doesn't drive the same way, the car doesn't always like that.
Yes, and it's funny you say that because... I have had people say that after I let my wife, for example, use my car or my son or my daughter for a week, and I've had people come to me with their car say, the clutch doesn't feel the same.
Could it be, or is it all in your head?
No, because they may have taken some life out of that clutch, and when you got back in the car, everything isn't right where it was when you had the car. The position of the pedal where it engaged, or if it did a little bit of chatters now, and it didn't before.
Yeah.
It's a fickle area.
So I think that the moral of the story is don't let your wife drive your car.
Or she pays for the clutch.
Fair enough. Let's go to Michelle in Old Chatham. Michelle.
Yes. I have a question about the TPS sensor. I had a couple of episodes in the winter. It's almost 5,000 miles ago. Started the car in the morning and almost no response between the accelerator and the power. And the first time it happened, I just wobbled a few feet because I had very little power and turned it off. And then I happened to turn it back on again and it was fine. Okay, so I took it to my local wonderful shop that I love. And they said, put it on the computer, and they said, well, only thing that shows up is the TPS sensor. And so I went away, and it didn't, nothing, it ran fine for a couple of days. I had maybe one or two episodes of it. Took it back to the dealer. They really put it on, did everything on the computer, cost about $100, and came out saying it needs a TPS sensor, which he said, and this is my real question, there's two questions. One is, I never did do anything about it, and I'm really not real worried about it because it seems to happen on initial startup, and if it doesn't start up, well, I just call road service. So I haven't done anything. So that's kind of a question. Is that okay? But the second question is, my own fellow said, we could put the TPS sensor in, but the car wouldn't work because the dealer has to flash it. that flash the computer.
Mm-hmm. My first question is, what's a TPS sensor? Let's start with that.
No, okay. Okay. No, that's not my real question. I kind of understand that.
No, I want to know.
And that's good. But my biggest question is, do you really have to take it to the dealer to have it reflashed?
Okay.
And obviously, people think you do because that's what they told me. They couldn't do it. They said they could put the sensor in, but they couldn't activate it.
Okay. We got it.
Now, is that really true?
Okay. What is it first, Gordon?
Okay, first thing is it's called the throttle position sensor, and it does exactly what it says. It tells the computer what position the throttle is in, wide open, half throttle, idle. It needs to know where the throttle is, where the driver wants the
is this a fuel injector related thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right.
And on your particular car, that throttle position sensor, I really don't think that requires any flashing or programming. I'd be very surprised if it did. And it's not a very difficult part to change, and it can create a lot of drivability problems. The fact that your check engine light came on and they scanned the computer and found that there was a fault with that TPS sensor, if you test it and find that it doesn't fail any of the tests, you could, on speculation, change it. You could wait till it happens again. And sometimes what happens is these sensors develop glitches in them. And you may not find that glitch on your test equipment, but when you start the car up the next morning, it fails. So to answer the question, I think I would want to get it replaced, because if it does fail, you could be having a lot of drivability issues. And I don't think it's a very expensive job, relatively speaking. So I think I would get it changed, just so you rule out one more thing that could potentially cause you trouble driving.
Is that an expensive part?
No, not really. And I don't know off the top of my head on that car, but in today's world of car repair, that's not a major issue.
Okay.
Well, it isn't really the cost that I was worried about. Nothing has happened in the last 5,000 miles, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen tomorrow.
Right.
And I understand, and I'm willing to replace it. What I'm not, the car was used. I bought it, had 60,000 miles on it, and no warranty from the dealer. I have no relationship with the dealer, nor do I want to have a relationship with the dealer. And it also happens to be a long, relatively long ways away.
Why don't you call?
But my people obviously believe that it has to be reflashed, so I guess I can't go to them and say.
Well, why don't you or somebody call a Hyundai dealer, service department, just ask that question? Say, look, I'm quite a ways away. My throttle position sensor needs to be replaced. Could you please ask the shop if my car has to be flashed or not? And they'll tell you.
Okay. Michelle, thanks a lot. Let's go to Linda in Corinth. Linda.
Hi. I'm calling about a 2005 Ford Escape. And the problem is that, here, I have to read what down what my neighbor told me to put down.
Okay.
The Torkenberger is stuck in overdrive.
That's bad.
Is that bad?
Yeah. You're not driving it, are you? You can't, can you?
It just started happening yesterday.
Yeah. What were the symptoms? Did it feel like a standard shift car that you forgot to push the clutch in?
No, it's an automatic, and I got to the red light, and it turned off.
Yep, it stalled.
That's what it just kept on doing, is turning off.
If the torque converter overdrive, if the overdrive part of the torque converter is stuck, how many miles are on this vehicle?
85.
Yeah. Those vehicles had their share of transmission issues. So you very well could be looking at a pretty substantial repair if you elect to get it fixed. What it should do is get diagnosed by either a transmission shop or somebody that's well-versed in that, so you're not getting the wrong information. But the likelihood of it being a transmission issue is pretty high, just knowing the history of those vehicles.
Okay.
So
sorry, Linda.
I don't think I gave you a very good outlook, but I think it could be bad.
I'm living on a fixed income. My car registration was due, my insurance was due, and now I just don't have to pay that money out.
Well, that's a silver lining.
Honestly, God, I could have paid it all out and then have this happen 3 weeks from now, and I really would have been.
Yeah,
stuck.
There you go. You just looked at the bright side.
I like that, Linda. Thanks a lot, and good luck. Let's go to Lynn in New Ashford. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I love this program.
Thank you.
I have a 98 BMW 323i, and this past winter when it was in storage, the battery died. Jumped it, got it, everything was running fine, but my remote key lock system doesn't work any longer. Would that be related to that in some way? And I did change the battery in the remote.
Do you have more than one remote with that car?
No, only one.
All right. It could be that the remote failed. And if you don't have another one, finding out is a bit tricky because you've got to get another one. And it's got to be introduced to the vehicle. And I don't think that one needs special program, but there's a procedure. But aside from the remote itself having a problem, it could be the receiver in the car is not reading the signal from the remote. And that's one of those things that when cars get older and higher mileage and they don't work, a lot of people say, man, I don't know if I want to spend that kind of money, because it more than likely would involve a trip to the BMW dealer.
Yeah,
And the thing to do at that point is say, you know, if you did decide to do that, just say, I'd like it diagnosed and just to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And then you can decide whether or not you want to go ahead and get it fixed.
Okay. Well, now the alarm still responds, but the key the locks don't lock.
With locking and unlocking it with the key, you mean, or from the remote?
From the remote.
Okay, so the remote will arm and disarm the car?
Correct.
But it won't lock and unlock the doors?
Correct.
Okay, then I think you've got an issue in the car regarding the locks. So in that case, the shop will troubleshoot the power lock system. And it could be a simple power and ground problem or a module or something like that. But, yeah, no. So that means your remote's working, because it wouldn't be arming and disarming the car if that weren't the case.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound as bad now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it doesn't sound as expensive as the Internet.
Probably not.
Thanks,
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn.
Have a good day.
All right, let's try to squeeze another call in here. Eleanor in, where are you calling from? Northeastern?
Yeah, hello?
Hello.
Yes, Eleanor McDowell calling from Northeastern near Greenwich, New York.
Oh, very good. Well, welcome aboard.
Good. Thank you. I have a 98 Volvo that has 30,000 miles on it, and we were charging the battery but forgot to put it in to park, and it drifted down a little hill by itself and hit a pear tree on the right side. This damage, it made the hood into a little eyebrow. It took the light, the fender, they all crumpled, and the bumper is a little off. We like the car a lot. It's perfectly drivable, except that when I put it in, I can't drive in drive, but I can. It looks like it's driving in third, but how it feels is it's driving in drive. And those are the facts. I wonder if you have a ballpark idea or of the cost of getting it fixed.
What do you think's wrong with it?
Well, you're not really concerned about the body damage, but you're thinking about why it feels like it's not in the correct mode of the transmission?
Yeah, it just, when I look at it, the light lights up by third, but when the light is at drive, it won't drive.
Okay, so the car, if you put it in D, it feels like it's in neutral?
Yeah.
It just, the engine speeds up, but the car doesn't go anywhere?
Correct.
So you click the lever back another notch, and it's indicating that it's in 3.
Yeah.
But it's acting as though it's in drive?
Drives beautifully, yeah.
Okay. Well, something is out of whack regarding the gear shift position sensor or whatever device that car has to tell what gear it's in. To me, that sounds like it might be an adjustment thing.
And I hope so. It wasn't a huge crash. It was a gentle crash.
Did the underside get damaged at all? Under where the, you know, below the bumper maybe? You think a limb or something could have gotten shoved up into the area of the transmission and engine?
No, I don't think so. I think I had it to a repair, a witchcraft repair, which is in Greenwich here, and they are very good. And he hasn't given me an estimate yet, but he didn't think the damage was frightening, at least.
Hey, Eleanor, I'm very sorry, but we are out of time, and good luck, and maybe call us next time. Let us know how you did. Gordon Fricke, very interesting. Once again, you have done it. We are just about out of time at this point. Thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize to all those left on the line. We'll try to get you in there next time. Support for Vox Pop comes from PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Walking the Dog Theater and Anton Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard, Thursdays through Sundays through July 22nd at 8 p.m. PS21Chatham.org. Athos Restaurant, Albany, serving classic Greek cuisine, a part of a Mediterranean diet, featuring whole grilled fish, Greek salads, and desserts. Dinner served daily, athosrestaurant.com. Mass Match, a locally owned dating service connecting both straight and gay singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com. And Crossroads Outdoors Country Store and Sports Shop, Chestertown, New York, featuring a Boar's Head Deli, fair trade organic coffee, craft beer, and more. CrossroadsOutdoors.com. That's it. Thanks for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Tiger Lipscomb. Answering the phones today, Kelly McGuire. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Moyers & Company tomorrow. Next week on Medical Monday, cardiologist Dr. Kim Poley to discuss women and heart disease. Stay tuned now for a news update.